Welcome to Vegas Inc. Radio. I'm Delwyn Goldberg, host of the show, and editor of Vegas Inc. and the Las Vegas Sun. Over the next half hour, we'll discuss the Las Vegas real estate market and thrifty ice cream, which is making its way back to Las Vegas. But first, we turn our attention to the technology industry that's burgeoning in the Valley and a high-tech automobile expo that recently came to Las Vegas. I'm here with reporter Rick Velotta. Welcome, Rick.
Thanks for having me, Delwyn.
Rick, you recently wrote a cover story for Vegas Inc. about sort of the state of technology in Las Vegas, a lot of it centered in downtown Las Vegas. How are we doing as a tech center?
Well, it's a really slow process, and I think that's the thing that frustrates a lot of people is the fact that it does take a long time to do this. I mean, you can't become Silicon Valley overnight, and certainly we don't have any aspirations of becoming Silicon Valley. But the small steps that are being taken are taking a long time. And I think that, you know, you could look at this and say there's a lot of progress that's been made and there are a lot of connections that have happened. But the fact is that this is a process that's going to take years and years to do. And even though we may be on the right track for getting things done, it's never going to be done fast enough to satisfy a lot of people. But because right now we're still hurting from the recession, and that's something that I think a lot of people realize that could really help us out is if we had a lot more tech jobs in this town. And certainly having the goal of doing that is a great aspiration, but in terms of getting it done, it's a long process.
In some ways, it seems like it might be chicken and egg. I mean, obviously the recession, we need the tech industry to create jobs, but I would also imagine that now might be a good time for startups if they can scrape together some money to get started, because it's a buyer's market, if you will.
Yeah, right. And certainly because things are happening in other parts of the country that might make Nevada a more appealing place to be. You know, our tax rate is still very low. We still have a pretty high quality of life here. I think a lot of it's just a matter of getting people to take a look at Southern Nevada, take a look at, in fact, the entire state, and see what we have here. I don't know that a lot of companies have even made that effort to do that. But now that we have a small growing community of tech companies already in town, they're getting the word out to some of their friends and saying, hey, you know, take a look at what we have here because this might be a little bit better for you. Obviously, they want to bring their friends here because they either supply or are supplied by other companies that are out there. They would love to see some of these companies join them in Southern Nevada just to kind of brainstorm together and to collaborate on projects that they've wanted to do. So bringing these people in is not just a function of the government, although the state government has made that effort and have led it, but it also involves the community of technologists themselves trying to bring people here.
Now, is the small tech industry that we have, is that all downtown or is it scattered about the valley?
No, it's scattered around pretty well. There's some groups that are actually based in some of the warehouse area of Las Vegas off Tropicana. There are some that are downtown. There are some that are actually in Henderson. So it's and there's a couple of companies that I've seen on the radar that are even in North Las Vegas. So it is all around the city. I think that downtown gets a lot of focus because of some of the efforts of Zappos and Tony Hsieh, because certainly he has a game plan on making downtown a more livable place for people. And part of that strategy is to bring more businesses into downtown, specifically tech businesses that would be compatible with Zappos and their business model.
Right. And how does the Apple deal? We have a big Apple data center planned for Northern Nevada. Obviously, that's not Las Vegas, but does that make Nevada stand out as a real place to do tech business?
Yeah, I think it bodes well because it every so often it really helps to get a big name. And you could argue that Zappos is a pretty big name, too, and having them make their presence felt in downtown Las Vegas is great. But certainly having Apple doing some of their things up in Northern Nevada, they're obviously a little bit closer to Silicon Valley and some of the things they do there. Their facility up there is going to be a little bit smaller than I think a lot of people envision, only like 40 to 50 jobs initially. But I'll tell you something, when you have a name like that moving into any place in Nevada, it's a good thing, and it certainly will encourage other companies to at least take a look.
And technology is pretty much a key piece of Governor Brian Sandoval's economic diversification plan. We are known as a one-industry state or town with the gaming industry, and while people have talked about it for years, if not decades, diversifying, he seems to have taken it to heart with the new Economic Development Office.
Right. And I think the thing that's really interesting about the technology side is that it really kind of connects at least five of the seven industries that the state is trying to attract here. One of the examples that I listed in the story was the defense industry side. Right now, the state of Nevada is trying to convince the Federal Aviation Administration to make Nevada one of the seven states that would be used to test unmanned aircraft, drones, in terms of civilian uses for these types of aircraft. It's something that I think is fascinating, and something that certainly technology has a big part of. And so there's like one instance right there where technology is a key part of just one of these industries. You know, there's others too, the gaming industry, the medical side of things, all kinds of things. They're all connected by some aspect of technology, and I think that is why tech is so important to Southern Nevada.
What's a civilian use for a drone? Any ideas?
Well, I've heard all kinds of things. One of them would be, for police agencies to monitor and keep a watch on situations from high up. But, you know, as crazy as this may sound, there's also been some thought about things like delivery of goods on drone aircraft right to somebody's front yard or something like that. I mean, again, that may sound a little bit crazy, but at the same time, there are people who are thinking in those terms. And if you stop and really think about it, with the traffic the way it is, wouldn't it be great if you could just, you know, put a package on some unmanned vehicle and then just drop it right into somebody's front yard? It's pretty amazing to think about the possibilities.
I was going
to
say airdrop diapers to my door for my
there you
baby.
Go. Exactly.
And so what needs to change for us to really blossom as a tech sector, if anything?
Well, I think there are some things that have to happen. One of the big criticisms of Nevada in terms of attracting companies to come here is the education side. And I know that Governor Sandoval is doing everything that he can to spend the money that's necessary to make the improvements to our education system. But the fact is that we are way behind. And this was struck home by a recent session that I attended in which there were some technology groups that are trying to help build a Nevada education fund. And by doing it, by getting licensing agreements with companies and then sharing the profits, things that are researched and put together on our university campuses, shared by the companies that bring them in, by the by education itself in the state, so everybody wins. Well, one of the problems with this is that you need some seed money to go about doing this, and the seed money just isn't there. We've got a lot of people who live in Southern Nevada who have second homes here or who have retired here, and they're rich. They're millionaires. But where is their money going to when they make donations? Probably to the colleges and universities that they already have affiliations with. So you're seeing Stanford and MIT get richer, but UNLV and University of Nevada in Reno not getting any benefit from it. This is one of the things that has to change in terms of getting some of that investment from people who now live here and should probably be supporting some of the things that go on here, but they just haven't in the past because of those past associations.
1, 3, 5 years down the road, do you think we're going to see a significant change in the tech sector locally?
I think it's going to be very gradual. I think that 1, 3, and 5, you know, in 1 year, I doubt that there's going to be a whole lot of change. Maybe within 3 years, we will see some. Most definitely by 5 years, especially if the Zappos project starts to spring to life in the months and years ahead. We should be seeing some kind of change down there.
Thanks, Rick. You're listening to Vegas Inc. Radio, part of Waking Up with the Sun. We're here talking with reporter Rick Velotta from The Sun and Vegas Inc. Let's change gears a little bit, literally speaking. You were at the SEMA conference last week. That's all things Carr. What did you learn?
Well, it's actually a show about aftermarket products that you buy for your cars. As a result, you know, obviously, in order to show some of these things that go on cars or go on vehicles, you actually have to bring the cars in, and it's fantastic to see all these different vehicles that are down there. And that's part of the fun of the show itself, is to see all these different vehicles that are on display. Never mind the fact that there are some neat gadgets that you put on them, and people will try to sell you things that they want you to put on them. And that's really what the intent of the show is to get those types of things out to market, to connect the buyers and the sellers of those different products so that they show up in some of the stores so consumers like you and me can go out and buy them. This show isn't open to the public, so it's kind of neat that we get the opportunity to go in and see some of the things that are there. And we know that eventually those are going to be on the shelves. Some of them are already out there in terms of being able to buy them online, things like that. So you'll see some of the products and things at the show months before they actually show up in the market.
And this is a huge show with 130,000 people were expected over the course of the week.
I'll tell you, when I was there, it was shoulder to shoulder people. It was a large number of folks. I would not be surprised if the attendance figure goes over that 130,000. One of the things that's important to know about this is that it's part of a two shows that kind of collaborate with each other. Apex is the other one. That one's being staged over at the Sands Expo Center. It's also an aftermarket type of a show. So anybody who signs up for one of them gets automatic free admission to the other one. So you'll see a lot of traffic between the Convention Center and the Sands Expo Center because a lot of the buyers are in town seeing displays at both of those locations. And on the first day that I was there last week, quite busy. The different people I spoke to in the different exhibitions said that the business was brisk, that people were coming in and talking to them, and a lot of deals were going to get done.
Well, that's good for Las Vegas and the economy and all of these presenters.
It is. It's and that's one of the appeals, I think, of Las Vegas, is that people come here not just because the show is good, which it is, but they also come here just to have some fun and to be able to do some things. And one of the things that they're doing over, or that they did over at the convention center, was have a racetrack set up in one of the parking lots. I mean, you don't see that every day in some of these other conventions in other parts of the country, but Las Vegas finds a way to do it, and they set up, they dedicated an entire parking lot for that activity.
We do it well. Real quick, what was the coolest thing you saw at the convention?
Well, I'm kind of a technology geek in terms of gadgets themselves. One of the things I liked was a device that you could put in your car that will block any transmissions of text messages, but it doesn't block telephone calls. So imagine if you have a son or daughter who's out in the family car and you want to make sure they're not texting while they drive, that will do it. Now, of course, that doesn't block them from calling, but the point is that texting, I think, is a lot bigger danger and damaging. The other thing that it does is it monitors. It tracks where the vehicle is going.
That's a win-win.
Yeah, it is a win-win. So if you want to make sure that your child doesn't go someplace where you don't want him or her to go, and it also monitors how fast the vehicle goes. So think about that. It's a monitor that's out there. And, you know, sometimes you'll have these younger drivers that are very technologically savvy themselves, and they know how to disable. As soon as it's disabled, this device will send an email message to you telling them that it's been disabled or that the app has been deleted from the phone.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much, Rick.
Thanks for having me, Dylan.
Rick Velotta is a reporter with Vegas Inc. and the Las Vegas Sun. You can follow his coverage at vegasinc.com or lasvegassun.com. You're listening to Vegas Inc. Radio, part of Waking Up with the Sun. We're here every Monday at 7 a.m. on KUNV 91.5 The Source. Switching gears, we're now talking to Vegas Inc. and Sun reporter Eli Siegel. Welcome, Eli.
Hi, Dylan.
Hi. So you recently wrote about a beloved treat that is making its way to Las Vegas, Thrifty Ice Cream. What's the story? Where can we get a cone?
You can get a cone in a lot of places, actually, surprisingly, but what we looked at was a gas station owner by the name of Pankaj Shah. He has formed what looks to be a first-of-its-kind business venture where he is opening up standalone thrifty ice cream parlors around the Las Vegas Valley. Right now, he's already got one, and it's in Henderson near the corner of Wigwam and Pecos, Wigwam Parkway and Pecos Road. And that opened up in April, and he is planning to open five more. And as far as I could tell, there aren't any standalone thrifty ice cream shops anywhere in the United States. You can buy it at Rite Aid. And as most people in Vegas remember, Rite Aid closed all of its locations in Vegas about 4 years ago. There were nearly 30 of them. There are still Rite Aids up and down California, and you can get thrifty ice cream there. But it's not easily found in Vegas, and now it will be.
And the uniqueness of the standalone thrifties is that they used to be in the thrifty pharmacy, and they were the little counters. But now we can have thrifty ice cream sans pharmacy.
Correct. That's exactly right. And even in Rite Aid today, they still have a counter where you can buy it by the scoop, or you can buy it by the carton inside the Rite Aid pharmacy chain primarily in California. And before Rite Aid bought Thrifty Payless, which was a very large Western U.S. drugstore chain. They had about 1,000 stores in 10 different states, I think, mostly in California. But yeah, now you can get it, and you don't need to go into a pharmacy. It's just like any other ice cream shop.
And Mr. Shaw is a gas station owner. How'd he transition from gas station to ice cream?
It was kind of a weird story the way he described it to me. He moved here from Dubai about 5 years ago. He's originally from Bombay, India. Lived for about 30 years in Dubai doing various businesses out there. He had an advertising agency at one point and various other ventures, and then moved here about 5 years ago and bought the Smarties gas station over on South Durango and West Twain Avenue over on the west side of the valley. And he was looking, as he told me, he was looking for ways to make better space of one of the walls inside the Smarties convenience store. And he figured he would sell ice cream. He just thought that might be a good idea. And he wanted to stock up on tubs of Haagen-Dazs, which, as anyone knows, is a very high quality but also very expensive ice cream, relatively expensive ice cream. And so his store manager said, you know, I think this might be too expensive for our customers. Let's look into something else. And so she started asking people as they walked in the store, hey, we're thinking of selling ice cream. Do you have any ideas? And that's when she learned about Thrifty. She's not her, the manager. Her name's Nancy Manning. She's from the Boston area. She's not from the West Coast. So she hadn't heard of Thrifty. And she told Pankaj about it. And then he started looking into it. So he went from there. That's how he learned about Thrifty.
And I don't know how many secrets he was willing to divulge, but where does he get the ice cream? How does that work?
He was not willing to divulge how exactly he landed the deal and how the deal is structured or anything like that. But he did say that the ice cream is delivered from California. Beyond that, he wouldn't give any details. But there are other places where you can buy Thrifty in Las Vegas. So he's not the only source. Although he does have the only standalone shop, you can get Thrifty elsewhere, including there's a Crepe Shack and Waffles in Henderson. It's a little crepe place. And then there's a ice cream shop, I think it's called Sweet Addiction, over on the west side of the valley. They also sell Thrifty ice cream. They're a relatively new ice cream parlor, and they sell Thrifty. And the owner of Crepe Shack in Henderson, he told me that he gets it from a distributor in Southern California. So that's where he gets it. They don't buy it from Rite Aid directly. They go through this distributor.
What a business.
It's pretty interesting, yeah. And a lot of people from the West Coast, when you mention Thrifty, their eyes light up and they have stories to tell about when they were kids and how they would buy it for 5 cents a cone. And that was always the deal at Thrifty. Thrifty was founded in downtown LA in the late 20s, and then they started selling ice cream. They started making their own ice cream about a decade later, just as a way to get people in the store. Retailers call it a loss leader, where you sell something real cheap and maybe don't make a profit on it, but it gets people in the store to buy other products. And I think that's how Thrifty started out. And for years, it was always very, very cheap. I think even through the 70s, it only cost 5 cents a scoop. And then even as recently as the 90s, it was still less than a dollar for a cone of ice cream. And so it's always been cheap, and people loved it, and it's always very popular. So in Vegas, when you mention Thrifty, if they know about it, they really light up.
And how much is a scoop here? I'm guessing it's more than 75 cents, or...
It is indeed, yeah. Inflation has gone a little bit faster than that. Pankaj is selling it for, I think, $1.79. It starts at $1.79 a scoop.
Still a relative bargain.
Oh, yeah, especially if you compare it to places like Cold Stone or Baskin-Robbins or some other ice cream places. I mean, I've you know, you can go to any number of ice cream places and it can easily cost $3 to $4 for a single scoop. So it's still pretty cheap.
Absolutely. And Thrifty is known for its signature, I don't know how you describe it, rounded edge square cone.
Yeah, they have a, it's like a caulking gun, as we described in the story, that is their, it's their signature scooper, and it's kind of a rounded cylinder shape, you know, kind of boxy. It's got a kind of a weird shape to it, but they it's a real signature scooper. And what's funny is that for the people who really love Thrifty, these scoopers are actually quite a big deal for them. Pankaj told me that once his store opened up and there's buzz started spreading about it, there was actually a guy who came into his store and tried to bribe one of his store clerks with $200 cash to buy one of the scoopers, and the clerk turned him down. But they can be a real hot commodity. And I think a month ago on eBay, back in September, there was an item listed as a brand new Thrifty scooper, and it was on sale for $320.
That's incredible.
It's pretty weird, yeah. But people love them, and they're a big deal.
Great. Well, you're listening to Vegas Inc. Radio, part of Waking Up with the Sun. We're here every Monday at 7 a.m. on KUNV 91.5 The Source. We're talking to Eli Siegel, a reporter with Vegas Inc. and the Las Vegas Sun. Let's change our focus a little bit away from ice cream, unfortunately, to an industrial complex in Henderson. There's some big news for the Henderson Desert. Right now, there's a pretty big complex, 150 acres planned with potentially a FedEx.
That's right. There are three real estate veterans in the Vegas Valley that are planning it's about 2 million square feet of industrial space down off St. Rose Parkway, down in the desert of Henderson, basically between the M Resort and Henderson Executive Airport. And the three guys who are doing this are Doug Roberts. He's the local partner with Panattoni Development, as well as Terry Manley. He's a former home builder. And Mike Dean, who is the founder of MJ Dean Construction. It's a general contracting firm. And they are planning to build, like I was saying, about 2 million square feet of industrial space. And the main tenant right now that they have, that they're planning to get in there is FedEx. And FedEx, I'm told, is planning a FedEx ground distribution center in a 300,000 square foot building.
That's pretty big news. Right now it's just undeveloped land.
It's all desert. If you drive out there and you drive down off St. Rose Parkway and work your way, I think it's Henderson, it's Airport Executive Drive, something like that. You drive out there, it's all dirt. There, and it's funny because when you drive up and down the street, there are numerous signs of people, you know, for past projects that never materialized or landowners trying to sell their land. I mean, it's really, but there's nothing. There's really nothing out there.
Well, maybe this is the start of something. But is it realistic to think, I mean, this is a huge, relatively huge complex. Our commercial vacancy rates here in Las Vegas and the Valley are pretty high. Who else are they going to get to move in there?
I don't know yet. And it would be interesting to see that the vacancy rate is quite high. It's not as high in industrial as it is in office. I think in industrial it's about 10 or 11% vacancy, whereas office is anywhere from, you know, 25 to 30%. I mean, that area of commercial real estate, the office market is doing much worse than industrial space. But industrial there are still a lot of vacancies out there, including in Henderson. So it'll be interesting to see who else they can get in there. Having FedEx, though, is a big name and could act as an anchor tenant of sorts, kind of like what you see with a shopping center when they get a Whole Foods or a Safeway in there. That draws in other tenants and shoppers and so forth. And so this is, you know, not quite the same thing, but it could function similarly.
And you reported close to 3,000 jobs potentially, is that correct?
That's what the developers are predicting, that's right. They're saying there could be around, I think it was 2,500 to 3,000 people would work on site in the development, which is known as the South 15 Airport Center. That's assuming everything that's planned is actually built.
And this was greenlighted by the city council recently, last month, I believe. And what's next?
It was. The Henderson City Council, they had to approve a pretty big. They were involved because they owned about 150 acres of the 170 acre project site, and so they had to agree to sell the land to these developers. And they voted. They approved on October 16th selling the land for about $13.6 million total. So it's about a little over $2 per square foot.
My birthday, so it must be a good project.
It definitely is, yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about real estate just generally in the Valley. Things appear to be picking up. Do you think that's true, or are we just seeing small upticks.
There are definitely some areas of real estate that are improving right now. If you look at the residential area, you know, foreclosure levels keep going down. The home prices are going up. Sales are up. You know, there are more and more new permits being pulled by home builders. So there are definitely some positive signs. But I think that there are still reasons for concern, because the reason, especially when you look at the reasons behind a lot of the activity with the foreclosures going down, a lot of that can be attributed to Nevada's robo-signing law, which took effect last October. So just about a little over a year ago now, that requires a lot more paperwork from banks to initiate, to actually foreclose on a home. And so it's slowed down the foreclosure process significantly. And so you've seen a huge drop off in foreclosures. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't homeowners out there who are behind on their mortgage payments or anything like that. All it means is that it's slowing the bureaucratic process, if you will, to actually foreclose on these homes. So that's why that might be happening. And then also you see home values going up because cash buyers, primarily from Southern California, Arizona, and other places outside of Las Vegas, they're still showing a very strong appetite for very cheap homes, and they're trying to buy as many as they can. I have brokers telling me that they get requests from out-of-state investors all the time telling them just to buy as many homes as possible, and they're looking to buy cheap homes that went into foreclosure in the $40,000 to $60,000 range, and they're renting them out. And so that out-of-state appetite, that's driving up the home values a bit.
Where do you find a house for $40,000 to $60,000 in the valley?
You would probably want to look in some of the areas that had the highest foreclosure rates, if you look into maybe in the Mountain's Edge area of the Southwest Valley, where there are just rows and rows of foreclosed and distressed homes. You can probably get something in that price range.
And these are all, they're going to rent them out and make a profit and wait for the market to return?
That's the plan, yeah. Brokers tell me that these out-of-state buyers, they have no plans to, quote-unquote, flip these homes where they just buy them and then fix them up and then sell them off for a profit. What they're doing instead is they're buying them, fixing them up, and then renting them out. And I suppose the plan would be to wait for 2, 3, maybe even 4 or 5 years until the housing market is much stronger, and then they can sell it for a profit after collecting several years of rent checks.
Absolutely. A lot's been said about so-called shadow inventory, which is these foreclosures are still being processed. They're just not, the houses aren't going on the market. Do you think that's a true concern? Are we going to bust again in a couple of years? Or
it's definitely a widespread concern, and bankers and real estate brokers, they'll tell you that there's a shadow inventory out there, and there's a huge pipeline of homes waiting to be foreclosed on. Once the banks figure out how to comply with the robo-signing law, and once they figure out how to process paperwork, they'll be at the same clip that they used to be of foreclosing homes at a relatively rapid pace. But that hasn't happened yet, and it's really unclear as to when it will or if it will.
And do you see this upward trend continuing?
I think for the time being, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen any slowdown in the number of homes being sold each month. I mean, the closings are, the number of homes being sold is rising. The home values keep rising. Prices keep going up. So I don't see it stopping anytime soon. Now, granted, these increases are not huge, and they are sometimes nominal, but they are indeed going up. And as long as houses are cheap and investors think they can rent them out, you're still going to see people coming in and snapping them up.
Well, that's good news for Las Vegas. Thanks so much, Eli.
You're welcome. Thanks, Dylan.
Eli Siegel is a reporter for Vegas Inc. and the Las Vegas Sun. You can follow his coverage at vegasinc.com and lasvegassun.com. This is Vegas Inc. Radio, part of Waking Up with the Sun. We're here every Monday at 7 a.m. on KUNV 91.5 The Source. I'm your host, Dylan Goldberg, business editor of Vegas Inc. Thanks to Steven Zeller, our producer, and the entire KUNV team. And thanks to you for listening. Enjoy your day.